does a city turn in order to make their roads safer? Who does a private fleet call to improve driving conditions for its drivers? Because these questions went largely unanswered, a new organization was created to better address solutions for safer roads. From companies like AB InBev and UPS to city governments, Together for Safer Roads, or TSR for short, is a global coalition on a mission to create safer roads. David Bronstein is the president of TSR, and he joins us today on the fleet to discuss how the organization has been making impacts for decades. From redesigning roads and intersections to providing data and data collection systems to improve civil engineering decisions, TSR is playing a part. David also discusses how TSR funding helps to enable smaller fleets to gain access to new technologies like machine vision or in-cab cameras to help improve driver safety. And the impacts for these solutions aren't just local. They are global. Learn more on today's episode with David Bronstein. The Fleet is brought to you by our friends at Lytx. Whether you manage a fleet of 5 vehicles or 5,000, Lytx is here to help. Lytx fleet dash cams are powered by best-in-class machine vision and artificial intelligence, designed to help commercial fleets and drivers operate more safely, efficiently, and profitably with the industry's most comprehensive and customizable fleet management platform. Go to lytx.com/the fleet to learn more today. That's lytx.com/the fleet. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Fleet. And today we have the president of Together for Safer Roads, David Bronstein. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, right out the gate, what is Together for Safer Roads?
Yeah, so Together for Safer Roads is a global business coalition. So we're a bunch of well-intentioned businesses that are trying to make the road safer for every road user. And sometimes we call ourselves a corporate social accelerator because we are trying to guide those well-intentioned businesses into situations where they can contribute in a productive way to global road safety initiatives.
Is this like a third-party governance type of organization where you are governing these companies? Is it more self-elective where people, these companies come together to say, hey, we are the group and we want to be part of something bigger? Give us an idea of how does one become part of it? Who sets the standards and how does it work?
It's a membership organization, right? So as with many business coalitions, you become a member of our coalition. And basically what you're agreeing to do is to bring your expertise, your data, your technology, your business networks to the road safety community, which often is a public sector group of individuals and, you know, authorities that have gotten together to try to, you know, be good stewards of our roads. And our organization is the private sector trying to meet them halfway to say, hey, we can help.
Yeah.
So you just kind of raise your hand and say, hey, we're in an organization that realizes that we want our employees to go home safe at night. We want the community members to be safe. And we don't want these horrific incidents happening on these public spaces we call roads.
So give us an idea of how it really came about, because you do have, and just for people who are not familiar or haven't looked you up yet, listening to this podcast for the first time, I mean, this organization, Together for Safer Roads, you guys have big names that are committed to be part of this. AB InBev is part of it. You have, of course, municipalities like the city of Bellevue, Washington has agreed to be part of it. So you have cities, you have big cities like Houston, Texas, big companies like AB InBev, iHeartMedia. This is bigger than maybe what some people might be thinking. How did you, I guess, start to get these organizations to come together and say, hey, yeah, we want to be part of this and we want to do this together?
Yeah, well, so I wasn't the originator of the coalition, but I came along a couple of years after it was founded. It was founded actually as a group effort by AB InBev and AIG and AT&T, actually.
Wow.
At its founding in the middle of the 2010s. Right about the same time when the United Nations was raising awareness for road safety as a global health issue, right? Because 1.3, 1.4 million individuals die in traffic-related crashes every year. So those companies got together and said, hey, we can do more, right? The call to action had been put out by the United Nations. So that then Together for Safer Roads was born of those three companies. And we quickly started recruiting other organizations to join us. So we now have PepsiCo and UPS, and we have, like you said, some of our public sector partners, and we have a lot of companies that are technology players that are involved in fleet safety, like Geotab and CalAmp and Samsara, and a whole bunch of organizations that have said, yeah, I want to be a part of this. As to like, how do we do this? I think, which was implied in your question, right? It really, we've divided our work into three different areas. One is city partnerships. And that's where we reach out to communities like New York and Houston. We've been in Shanghai, we've been in Sao Paulo, down in Brazil. We've been working with Bellevue, Washington, and we're about to start working with the city of Nashville too. And we say, look, here we are, we're the private sector. We know we have something to add value to. You're creating a Vision Zero action plan. Let us help, let us advise, let us bring some resources to the table. And then we go from there. It's very consultative, and that's the way we partner with cities. Then we have a fleet safety area, which is near and dear to many of our members, because actually these are large companies, as you mentioned, who operate vehicles all over the world as a part of their businesses. And they know that while they are very well resourced, not every fleet is. And so we have started to work on ways that we can transfer knowledge from those very capable fleets to fleets that still need help creating safety cultures. And so we've created fleet safety programs for small and mid-sized fleet operators that we are now trying to scale. And then our last area of program work where we leverage our business community is in innovation. And what we're doing there is we bring together some of those same companies to work on fleet safety issues. And also in the future, we're going to start tackling the infrastructure itself. So we all use the roads, the built environment, you know, whether we're in a commercial vehicle or whether we're in a passenger vehicle, whether we're walking, biking, scooting. And there are ways to improve that as well. But often there are gaps in the knowledge base that has to do with that area. So what we're trying to do is innovate around fleet safety and innovate around the built environment and bring new value to the road safety practitioners that are out there.
You know, you mentioned some of these big cities, they reach out or you reach out to them and say, hey, we need help. Give us an idea of how are you helping these municipalities? How are you helping? What happens after you guys get involved? I'd love to understand a little bit about this because it's a super obviously important cause, noble cause. But what actually happens? Is it like policy? Is it legislation? Like, give us an idea of what happens when you get involved with a city.
Yeah. So I didn't know Houston particularly well before I started doing this work, but I've gotten to know the city very well. I've met the mayor numerous times. Houston, unfortunately, is one of the most dangerous cities in the country when it comes to road safety. So going back about 3 years ago, there were a lot of articles that were coming out in the local Houston newspapers that caught our eye. We reached out to the mayor's office and said, hey, we'd like to come and have a conversation with you, talk to you about how we might be able to help. So sometimes it's just us paying attention to communities that we care about. What ended up happening was we, through conversations with the mayor, we talked about one of the communities programs that he already has in place called Complete Communities. So this was an initiative that the mayor had already started. One of the pillars in there was road safety. So I said, wait a second, if you're already working on this and these communities are identified by you as high priority, what can we do together? We then agreed that there was a very symbolically important community in Houston called Gulfton. And Gulfton is basically the melting pot of Houston. It's the most densely populated neighborhood in Houston, which means actually, I think, technically, it's the most densely populated community in all of Texas.
Wow.
And they have a terrible road safety issue on their hands. And they had some recent deaths that they were unfortunately dealing with. So we devised a plan together with the city that we would bring some resources to the table to try to help reimagine what the Gulfton community could look like with safer roads. Fast forward to today, we've recently done some groundbreaking on an entirely reimagined important road segment in that community that built upon a collective effort to engage the community to say, hey, we think you have a problem with this road segment. How would you like to solve it? Right. So the community engagement was a part of our collaboration. We also brought some technology to the table that said, we want to measure near misses. So if you're familiar with the analytics of the work that we do, maybe you're not, but at the end of the day, near misses are the things that can tell us about what might happen that's more catastrophic, right? A serious injury or fatality. So we brought some new technology to the table that we measured near misses in this community to quantify the issues that were happening in Gulfton. And then we also helped the community to engage with an engineering firm that came up with a design to reimagine what this road segment could look like. And so we're now at the point where we've done groundbreaking, and all of the community engagement technology work, the work through this design firm originated because we said, hey, we want to help. We didn't know how we were going to do it just yet, but that's the kind of resource that we were able to bring to bear. And I think the community is thrilled with it. It's not, you know, for us to say, it was for them to decide how they wanted to solve the problems. But we were proud to say we're now reinventing what Gulfton will look like for every road user in that community. Now, take what we did there and think about how do you scale that technology. We then found an opportunity in Gulfton in Bellevue, Washington, where the same computer vision technologies that were used to analyze near misses were used at scale in Bellevue. So we went from having, I think, 4 cameras in Houston, if I remember correctly, to more than 40 cameras that we used in Bellevue, Washington. We did the first what's called network-wide near miss analysis that's been done to our knowledge in the United States. And now Bellevue, Washington and their Department of Transportation and their road safety practitioners and their city council are now using that insight that they gained from that near miss analysis that happened across their whole city to inform their Vision Zero initiative and where they need to go and solve problems next. So that's a good example of how we start in one community. We learn what they want to do. We bring some resource to the table in a consultative way. Then we try to scale it someplace else. And so that's the kind of process that we use. It can be very time intensive. When we start, sometimes you don't even know how it's going to scale, but we kind of follow our instincts and try to work with the communities.
For our audience, because I'd love to hear, like, you got all this data, you've evaluated all the near misses, you made some suggestions. Now, first of all, cities are notoriously slow to implement anything. So the fact that they implemented this study is step one.
Yeah.
A lot of times city studies last a couple of years.
Right.
Then you got them to do something. Tell us, what did they do? And then I'd love to hear some of the impacts. Like, you know, it used to be like this.
Yeah.
Now it's like that. I'd love to understand a little. Because you mentioned, like, you're forever re-engineering the way Gulfton's gonna work.
So Gulfton, the work is not complete because I just said it does take a little while to do some of these on the ground changes to the built environment. But imagine a road running through a community that is densely populated, that is essentially an 8-lane highway, 4 lanes in each direction.
It runs through the community?
It runs straight through this community. And it's not a highway. It is not a highway, right? But it has the same kind of feel of a highway. It's 4 lanes. It's 120 feet wide. And you're asking people in this community to move from one side of the community to the other. So you've got shopping center on one side, and then you've got the community center on the other side. People are constantly walking across. There's buses, bus lanes on this very treacherous stretch of road. And so the vision that the community came up with the help of this design firm was, let's narrow this down, right? It's kind of common sense, right?
You know,
so if you can control for speed using the built environment and discouraging speeding, then you're really helping things a lot. So they're narrowing the road, right? And they're going to control speed that way. They're also doing some interesting things with, you know, bike lanes that are adjacent to this. They're putting in a new traffic signal. So this is stuff that's already known to the community. They just needed a new way to approach the problem and engage the community in the problem solving. Now they went after this because now they have this new vision that everybody's coalesced behind, right?
You know, and that's one of the things that's always the city planner or civil engineering, it's been like the core problem. I've read in doing this podcast, learning about this, the core problem is always, how do I move more people from A to B, right? And then that's always seems to be like the number one priority, getting more people from A to B.
Yeah.
But then safety then is always like, oh, why do you think that it's so hard, I guess, to plan routes safely? Because moving people doesn't seem to be a problem. Like, people can figure out systems to move a lot of people, but then it's like, oh, this causes a lot of problem because we've now jammed maybe too many people moving too fast through too small of a space. Why do you think planning routes is such a challenge? Why do so many cities have, or so many places have a hard time with this?
Look, these are shared spaces, right? It is essentially a political domain, right? We're talking about, and for many, many years, people needed to move from place point A to point B, and the car was the best way to get there, right? So when you're trying to meet people's needs in a particular community, you're sensitive to that, you know, call to action, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to sit in traffic, right? That's not good service to your community, right? So for many years, that's been the predominant thinking, I think, right? And you know, the pendulum swings. Now we're seeing the impact of that over many years in the United States and in many other communities where we prioritize one type of road user over others. And I think the pendulum is swinging back now where communities actually want to see more bike lanes. They want to slow traffic. They're more accepting of other modes of transportation. So I think that's part of it is the public demand for different modes and mode sharing. And it's easier said than done to say, hey, we should all share the roads, right?
Mm-hmm.
You actually need some political will to make that happen. So that's a part of it. And then there's also just funding issues that happen, right? It's relatively inexpensive to pave a road and add a lane and, you know, like, do things that way. To rethink how you actually move people around takes a little more effort, and perhaps sometimes it means more money to reimagine these things. So I think there's some inertia that builds up, but again, I think we're finding that more and more communities want to see multimodal options, cycling, scooting, pedestrian safety. So then you start to think about, okay, well, maybe it's not such a good idea to have fast-moving vehicles in close proximity to those other road users, right? So there's some common sense here, you know, and I think the civil engineering community is definitely inspired by the people that they serve. And I'm hopeful that, especially with the new infrastructure bill, that safety is going to become an even higher priority when it comes to determining how we spend money to get people around our communities.
So, you know, the organization you mentioned before, it was started a little while ago. It's sound like it was born out in the private sector. Tell us a little bit about what you see today. You mentioned before, like, sometimes private companies come forward and say, hey, we need help. And then sometimes cities come forward. Do you see more companies coming forward? Because road safety is not, it's always going to be a problem. It seems to be a worsening problem. I'd love to hear your opinion on this. But do you see more cities, governments, as well as private groups coming forward to say, like, hey, we need help?
I hope it's not always going to be a problem. I mean, we're at TSR, we refer to ourselves as stubborn optimists because we think that road crashes and injuries and fatalities are preventable.
Yeah.
So we're trying to build a big tent where everybody else acknowledges that, public and private sector alike. I would say we're still in the early days, actually, of bringing even more private sector involvement to this space. There's a lot of ways that private sector can contribute to this. You know, I've been involved with a new and emerging distracted driving coalition where we're bringing the insurance industry together with other public sector players and the like. Distracted driving is a big problem that we still have yet to solve in the road safety space. So there's always those kinds of things. As technology are moving forward, we need to sort of mitigate the unintended consequences, if you will, of those things. So we need more and more help. We need more and more organizations across different sectors of society to jump into this, because we all have something to contribute. But we fundamentally need to believe that this is preventable. It is not something that just happens. It happens because it's a system we've created and we can change the dynamics of the system, whether that's individual road user behaviors or that's the roads that we use or it's the vehicles that we use. So yeah, we need to keep raising awareness for this issue so we get even more private sector involvement to help solve the problem.
You know, what you just mentioned reminded me of a previous guest. Dr. Atchley was on our show, and he's a professor who studies the psychology behind distracted driving. Like, why do we even do this to begin with? Yeah. He was saying that, you know, it's probably not going to be solved without policy, meaning, like, we as humans are wired. So we're wired to make ourselves happy and the technology makers that largely are responsible for making the devices that keep us distracted are financially incentivized to keep us paying attention to that thing. So you've already seen plenty of studies that say like reading a cell phone notification actually releases a little dopamine in your brain. Yeah. Like it makes you like legitimately feel good. And so he was saying like that behavior is not going to change. So he was saying that distracted driving and safer driving really has to come kind of like what you just said. It's got to come from the policy level, or it's got to come from the private policy level where the private organizations are saying, hey, this is how you got to operate our vehicles. Like that can have a great, great impact on road safety.
Yeah.
And then public policy has got to change as well. He says it's going to be very difficult to change public policy because it's like, you know, people say, hey, you can't hold a cell phone while driving. Well, what does that cause people to do? It causes them to hold it like below their steering wheel. They're looking right. down. And I know you've seen people drive like that where they're like just looking yeah. down with their hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And so people try to hold it out of view. And so when you think about, and I agree that all of these things, I believe that it can be changed as well. I'd kind of lean towards what you're saying. It's probably at the policy level that something's got to happen. Do you have any stories that you can share in like different private sector companies, whether they've implemented or whether it's cities? Like, you know, I'd love to hear some of the things that groups have done to improve roadways, because I think these are the things that we most need to learn from.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely policymaking is a part of the solution. I don't think it's the only thing that has right. to happen. We spend most of our time as a coalition working with cities directly and not trying to set national policy, because we are focused on more short-term wins. And we know that the, you know, national policy making can take years. That's not to say we're not supportive of it. But where I was going with that is that you have to pull all the levers at the same time. It's not just one lever. So we're setting social norms when it comes to distracted driving. We can say it's inevitable, but I don't really believe that. Because at one point, we also believed that, you know, people should get into vehicles without a seatbelt. So yeah. you can mandate that, but you still have to change people's behavior to yeah. have them put the seatbelt on. I think there's behavior setting and so new social norms that have get created. The same thing happens with, you know, driving under the influence, right? We can set policy about, you know, it's illegal to drink and drive, for sure. Everybody agrees to that now, but we still have to have social norms change for that to really be effective. And I would add that, so combating new technologies and things like that is no easy challenge, but I think you have to battle experiences with experiences. So what I mean by that is what the app makers and others have figured out in the digital world is that compelling experiences keep you engaged with your device, right? So when we're talking about how do you change an experience for an individual who's on the road who might be compelled to try to pick up that phone, we could cut that off, right? You could say no cell phone use at all. Your phone turns off when you get in a vehicle that's moving a certain speed. That's one technological solution. But here's another thought that I have about it. And I think we're going to start down a path where we should see how far we can go with this whole experience thing. But my point there is, imagine if you were in your vehicle and you were alerted to the presence of particularly risky and vulnerable road users, whether they're cyclists, or whether they are pedestrians that you might not have even been aware of without the use of some additional technology, right? And I don't mean that this should be a crutch for people who are distracted. And then all of a sudden the vehicle says, oh, wait, you got to watch out. What I'm saying is we can be better about the way we design these systems so that a advanced driver assistance system actually makes people on a day-to-day basis aware of the risks around them and that they need to pay more attention. That's the behavior you engender, is not that I can look at my phone because the car is going to take over. It's the opposite. It's I need to keep my hands on the wheel, because my vehicle at some point during this trip is probably going to tell me that there is an individual that is at risk of being hit by me or somebody else, right? So that's an experience when your steering wheel shakes or something draws your attention to a part of the road that you might not have otherwise seen, right? That's a compelling experience also that could change people's behavior, right? And a similar experience would be, hey, guess what? You know, there's going to be automated distracted driving enforcement now. So if you happen to drive past a camera that is set up for the purposes of enforcing distracted driving, and now you suddenly get a ticket for that. That works with speed enforcement, right? That is, it's a different experience with speeding than you have otherwise, right? That's a deterrent effect, like right there. And do you know what? Speed enforcement works. There's a lot of controversy about it around different communities. I'm not here to say every community needs to have it, but it does work, right? If it's implemented properly. So we need to battle these new technological experiences with new experiences that really engender behavior change that are as compelling and as tied to our physiology, as you were suggesting, as the other experiences.
Yeah. Speaking to that point, there was a intersection in my town or town nearby where they installed automatic ticketing cameras at a busy, busy intersection, because one of the number one causes for a major accident is, I guess, people taking last second lefts, you know, trying to squeeze their car into the flow of traffic, or like, you know, I don't know what the term is, but like where they, you take a left, you think you have more space than you do, but you actually don't. And you're rushing a yellow light maybe, or you've probably seen it as well. Like it'll actually turn red, but people are already in the intersection. So they just gun it and they take off and they put the intersection up. And then they just told everyone that, hey, your vehicle will be, whoever owns the vehicle by license plate and registration will be assessed this fine for reckless driving. What happened over time was people just knew that the intersection was monitored. So they stopped doing it. And I read a stat about how fender benders as well, like rear ending, also went down because people knew, I'm approaching this intersection that tickets everybody. Like you kind of knew, because you knew it was going to ticket you, you changed your behavior. Kind of, that was a little, you know, a little negative reinforcement. But I think that it's both, like you suggested, it's going to be positive. The reality is there has to be some type of punitive damage, because most people typically don't think to themselves without, like, they think of their world in like benefits and consequences, right? They need to know, like, this is, I get rewarded and this, I get punished. People try to handle between those things. I think a little bit mix of both is going to be what it takes.
Exactly. It's not an either or, right? This is a complex system we've set up. It is a system, and we need to rethink parts of the system to discourage the riskiest behaviors. And we also need to think about what influences individual behaviors, right? This is not purely about personal responsibility. These are systems that we've created that individuals operate within, and we can change the dynamics in that system for the better.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the private sector as well, because you mentioned before, you named some big companies, right? UPS, Pepsi, AB InBev. Mm-hmm. Yeah, these companies have a lot of vehicles on the road. What are they looking to do? Like, when, if I'm a net, imagine I don't work with TSR today, right? So I operate a fleet. What are they coming to you for?
I think in the best case scenario, what they're looking for is new ways to express their commitment to the communities that they care about, right? These are all socially responsible businesses. So they want to collaborate within this environment we've created to create value for society. So let me give you an example. I was talking to you about New York City, right? So one of the things that we're able to do with New York City and these other partners is we are convening what we call an initiative around the truck of the future. So here you have New York City, who has the largest municipal fleet in the country. And what we're doing is we're rethinking what kinds of technology should be on the vehicles that these businesses are using. And why are we doing that? It's not just because there's property damage associated with those vehicles if a crash happens, right? It's because these companies and this city care a lot about the community and the individuals that share those roads with large vehicles. So what we're doing actually is we're implementing a new kind of AI on camera systems on these vehicles to pilot how camera systems that are, I was talking to you about earlier about vulnerable road users, camera systems that are specifically designed to predict the behaviors of vulnerable road users that you're sharing the road with as a commercial vehicle operator. What can that system do to tell you, alert you before you have an incident with a vulnerable road user? So that's the kind of thing that once companies come to TSR and say, oh, wait a second, I can be involved in that collaboration. And not only is it going to help my fleet, and there's a bottom line impact, but now I get to go into my communities and say, look at how far we're going to make sure that we are responsible operators, and that not only are our drivers driving safely in the community, but everybody else is getting home safely. So there's sort of that blend of innovative collaboration and that social responsibility aspect that we're trying to bring together. That's what our members are, you know, really looking for when they partner with TSR.
Now, you mentioned in the very beginning of the conversation that when people join, there's like they're willing to pool their resources and data. Obviously, most software, technology, hardware-driven products require a lot of data for fine-tuning to improve. Was there any resistance? It doesn't sound like there's much, but I'd love to understand a little bit. What about this like data pooling? Are people very, very open? Like, hey, I want my drivers. Are they worried that it becomes like competitive where it's like, oh, my company's drivers aren't as good as yours?
No, let me be clear.
Yeah.
We are not pooling data in that way. Right.
Okay.
We're collaborating. We're using similar solutions. We're advocating for the same solutions, but we're not pooling data in a way where you know, one business's data is getting mixed with another business's data, getting mixed with public sector data. There are times when we are doing very deliberate data and analytics work, for sure. That's a big part of what we're trying to do, especially as I talked to you before about the near miss work we're doing. But it is not pooling of data, sharing of data in any way that makes anybody uncomfortable.
It's sort of sharing
solutions. We will then, in this Truck of the Future initiative we're talking about, when we're piloting these solutions, we're going to be piloting it in two states, in New York City, in Florida, and also in Guadalajara, Mexico. We will at that point then look at the insights we're gleaning from these fleets using this new technology. But none of the data is going to mix together. It's insights that are coming together, not the data itself, if you follow me. So
yeah, makes total sense.
We're very careful about that. Down the road, we do see opportunities to share data in ways that is very privacy aligned, but that's not a requirement for working on these collaborations with TSR.
No, that makes total sense. When you think of all the possibilities and outcomes, as an innovator, it's got to fire you up. There's another thing that you guys do that also kind of pushes that agenda, which is this Vision Zero Technology Fund, which is like helping.
Yeah.
It sounds like you guys help. I'd love you to explain this program. It sounds like you help finance, or like not finance, but
yeah,
you contribute capital to companies trying to do tremendous things to help road safety, fleet safety. I'd love for you to tell us, what is Vision Zero Technology Fund?
Yeah, so we're really proud of that. We just kicked it off last year. So I told you earlier about this fleet safety program we call Focus for small and mid-sized fleet operators. So as we were rolling that out and designing that program, we realized, though, that we were requiring organizations to adopt certain technologies to be a part of that program. And we said, well, wait a second, maybe we're going to actually, especially with COVID hitting so hard, financially, organizations are strapped. So we went to UPS, we went to our board member, Cal Amp, and said, can we work with you to create a new fund that would make grants to organizations that really need help acquiring these proven safety technologies for their fleets? And while we were doing that, we started talking about who is really in need during COVID. And what we discovered was there are a lot of service-related organizations and nonprofits and essential services businesses that are out there that still need these kinds of things. So we ended up giving a grant to City Harvest in New York City, and they're using the funds to augment what they have in place to keep their vehicle safe. I don't remember the exact stats, but an order of magnitude increase in the demand for City Harvest services as COVID was hitting. And I think to this day still, where the community needs their help, which means their fleet is being pressed into action more and more and more and more. And God forbid something happens with that fleet, right?
Yeah.
You know, so that was the genesis of the Vision Zero Technology Fund. We are trying to offer grants to organizations like City Harvest. We're targeting school districts, we're targeting other organizations that operate vehicles that our communities really need to be healthy and safe. And we're trying to grow the technology fund. It would be wonderful for us to be able to give grants to even more organizations.
So this is specific for the, you know, organizations in need that want to implement these technology solutions that could benefit from implementing these technology solutions, but may not have the operating capital to invest in them, because these things,
that's right.
You know, as they are today, they're not they are expensive or possibly outside the budget of these organizations. So this goes to, like you just said, improve overall community and road safety because now they have access to these things.
Yeah. And Albert, I want to point out, though, that this isn't just about high-tech solutions either, right?
Yeah.
It can also be what you might call low-tech solutions.
What's an example of a low-tech solution?
A vehicle side guard. A side guard
is a physical side guard.
It's a physical barrier that's put on the side of a vehicle that, again, God forbid there's an incident with a vulnerable road user that, or even a vehicle, that vehicle does not go, or that individual does not end up under the truck, right? It's actually a physical barrier. Like if you look at trucks on the roads now, they're actually quite high. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, there are a fair number of incidents where individuals end up under the vehicle, and that's a horrible situation. So side guards, that's not high tech. That's a physical barrier that you can buy today. It's not mandated in the United States, but you could choose to put it on your vehicles if you want to make them safer. New York City has actually made it a requirement for all of their municipal vehicles, right? Mm. And in Europe, side guards are required for commercial vehicles. That's not where we're at. I think there's some regulatory action that might bring this to the United States, but a side guard is an example of a low-tech solution that we would fund.
Yeah. It's a simple thing that can create a lot of benefit.
Yep.
Oh, that's pretty fantastic. You know, one of the things before we close is I'd love to hear your experiences internationally, because another thing you mentioned that I made note of in the very beginning was that you guys operate not just in the United States, but all over the world. And you mentioned Sao Paulo specifically, which I was blown away by, because of the places I've been, I still remember to this day, because it burned a hole in my memory of how rough it is to drive in Sao Paulo. And the other one was Jakarta, Indonesia. I've not been to Shanghai, which you mentioned Shanghai. You did not mention Jakarta. I just happen to have been to Jakarta. Are you familiar with Jakarta?
I haven't been there, but I've been to cities that I'm guessing are similar to Jakarta. I've been to India several times and other. Yeah, these are wonderful places, actually, but their roads are not the safest. So
I think this is one of the things that people in the States don't really comprehend until they see it, is how much more densely packed roads actually can be. In other countries, the amount of vehicles per, let's call it square 10 feet. I don't know. Yeah. It's so densely packed. Like it feels like every space between a car is occupied by like four or five scooters. You know what I'm talking about? They just jam the scooters in there. They're very comfortable carrying like luggage. I don't know how best to describe it. Like they have stuff stacked on their scooters and they're jammed in every spot that you can imagine. When it comes to international policies, I know every city's the same or different, but what is TSR trying to accomplish in these international cities? Because like you said, a lot of your clients, Pepsi, they operate in these cities too. So they're everywhere. How do you guys go about thinking about how to help internationally? Is it at the policy level, or what do you guys think about? What do you guys focus on?
One of the biggest issues internationally is just data. We were talking about data before. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest issues globally, especially in low and middle income countries, is access to data that can guide their work to help decide where you should go first to solve these problems, right? So our work in Sao Paulo is exactly that. And we actually are not active in Sao Paulo, but our gift to Sao Paulo, if you want to call it that, right, was helping them to create a comprehensive data system at a state of Sao Paulo level, not just the city, that would allow many municipalities in that city to have timely data that would help them to then put in place interventions. And so that was our big contribution, was working with the governor's office in Sao Paulo, together with Anheuser-Busch's local company down there, as well as some other local collaborators, to figure out how we could help them build a data system that was timely enough that you're not waiting 2 years to have data show up in a dashboard, if you will, that says, here's where the problem is, because it's way too late, right? Look, we already, even in this country, already are using the wrong metrics, if you think about it. We're using lagging indicators.
Which lagging indicators are we using?
Well, an injury and a fatality, by definition, happened in the past. They're not necessarily the best indicator, right? That's why TSR is so enthusiastically championing near miss, because we are starting to prove that that is a proxy for the future, where we can we can intervene before those things happen, right? So in Sao Paulo, our contribution really was helping them to design a data system with others, right? We weren't the only ones involved, but with others to make their data more comprehensive and especially timely, so that on a week-to-week basis, they had police reports and other important sources of data about traffic safety that the municipalities could then use to create action plans. And this program first started with a handful of communities, and then it expanded to, you know, upwards of 100 communities are using the same data system to create their action plans. And those action plans were then funded by the state. The beauty of this was the state of Sao Paulo had already come up with a funding source, but they didn't know where to direct the funds, nor did the municipalities. So the data system became the bridge between, hey, we have this funding, but where should we deploy it? And what intervention should we use? Well, you got to connect the dots. So that was what that project was about. And though we haven't actually been active in Sao Paulo for a couple of years, that's the kind of project that we really love doing. And, you know, our work more recently has been in North America, but we go back and forth between our engagements overseas and in North America.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I totally agree. The amount of dollars that are going to be contributed to solving a problem, very finite. The amount of problems feels endless sometimes. So let's use some data to figure out where this, you know, what are some of the best opportunities, best sources where we can help people the most. It seems like a great way to think about how to deploy the money.
Yeah.
David, I want to thank you for joining us today on The Fleet. Thanks for sharing all the stuff you were up to at TSR. For our audience, if you forgot or need a nice reminder, togetherforsaferroads.org is where you can find David and his organization. togetherforsaferroads.org. David, thanks for joining us today on The Fleet.
Thank you so much for having us.
The Fleet is presented by our friends at Lytics, the award-winning video telematics and fleet management solution. Trusted by more than 4,000 fleets worldwide, Lytics is the next generation of fleet technology. Help drivers address risky driving behaviors like cell phone use, speeding, and inattentive behind the wheel, all while harnessing the power of video and data to thrive in today's competitive environment. From safety to compliance to fleet tracking, Lytics technology offers the industry's most comprehensive and customizable fleet management platform. Go to lytics.com/thefleet to learn more today. That's lytx.com/thefleet.